Raythan had hoped for an office with a better view, but the chapel, majestic as it was, held no second floor. Fortunately, the grounds were well kept, and his office, Fionn's old room, overlooked nicely trimmed hedges and carefully arranged flower beds. Now that he had cleared the walls of paintings and thrown out Fionn's numerous personal effects, the chamber was approaching a level of dignified orderliness, appropriate for a Dorethi Gjorn. Nodding to himself, Hraithen turned his attention back to the scroll on his desk. His orders. He barely dared hold them in his profane hands. He read the words over and over again in his mind, imprinting both their physical form and their theological meaning on his soul.
My lord, your grace.
Hraithen looked up. Fionn entered the room, then crouched in a subservient huddle on the floor.
Speak!
I have done wrong, my lord. I have acted contrary to the plans of our lord Yareth.
Your sin was complacency, Artith. Contentment has destroyed more nations than any army, and it has claimed the souls of more men than even Elantris' heresies.
Yes, my lord.
You still must leave, Artith.
Is there no hope for me then, my lord?
That is airless foolishness speaking, Artith. Not Fjordel pride. Rise, my brother. Your mind may have become tainted with airless thoughts, but your soul is still Fjordel. You are of Yadeth's chosen people. All of the Fjordel have a place of service in his empire. Return to our homeland. Join a monastery to reacquaint yourself with those things you have forgotten, and you will be given another way to serve the Empire.
Yes, my lord.
Understand this before you leave, Artith. My arrival is more of a blessing than you can possibly understand. All of Yadith's workings are not open to you. Do not think to second-guess our god. Look there on the table, Artith. Read that scroll.
Fionn looked toward the desk, eyes finding a scroll resting thereon.
This is the official seal of Wern himself.
Not use the seal, Artith. That is his signature as well. The document you hold was penned by His Holiness himself. That isn't just a letter. It is scripture.
Fionn's eyes opened wide, and his fingers began to quiver. Then, realizing in full what he was holding in his unworthy hand, he dropped the parchment to the desk. Fionn's eyes didn't turn away from the letter, however. They were transfixed, reading the words as voraciously as a starving man devoured a joint of beef. Few people actually had an opportunity to read words written by the hand of Yadeth's prophet and holy emperor. Hraithen gave the priest time to read the scroll, then reread it, and then read it again. When Fionn finally looked up, there was understanding and gratitude in his face.
Thank you.
Could you have done it? Could you have followed Wern's commands?
No, Your Grace, I could not have. I couldn't have functioned, couldn't have even thought with that on my conscience. I do not envy your place, my lord. Not anymore.
Return to Fjorden with my blessing, brother.
Hraithen took a small envelope from a bag on the table.
Give this to the priests there. It is a letter from me telling them you accepted your reassignment with the grace befitting a servant of Yadith. They will see that you are assigned to a monastery. Perhaps someday you will be allowed to lead a chapel again, one well within Fjordan's borders.
Yes, my lord. Thank you, my lord.
Fionn withdrew, closing the door behind him. Hraithen walked to his desk and slid another envelope, identical to the one he had given Fionn, from his letter bag. He held it for a few moments, then turned it to one of the desk's candles. The words it held, condemning Arteth Fionn as a traitor and apostate, would never be read, and the poor, pleasant Arteth would never know just how much danger he had been in.
With your leave, my lord Gjorn.
The man was a minor dwarven who had served under Fionn for a decade. Hraithen waved his hand, bidding the man to leave. Fionn had done some serious damage to his underlings. Even a small weakness would build enormous flaws over 2 decades' time, and Fionn's problems were anything but small. The man had been lenient to the point of flagrancy. He had run a chapel without order, bowing before Aerilish culture, rather than bringing the people strength and discipline. Half of the priests serving in Kayi were hopelessly corrupted, including men as new to the city as 6 months. Within the next few weeks, Hraethen would be sending a veritable fleet of priests back to Fjordan. He'd have to pick a new head Arteth from those who remained. Few, though, they would be.
Come!
Hraethen had been seeing the priests one at a time, feeling out the extent of their contamination. So far, he had not often been impressed.
Arteth Dilaf.
Hraethen looked up.
You're Aerilish?
The priest bowed with the proper amount of subservience. His eyes, however, were defiant.
How did you become a priest of Dorethi?
I wanted to serve the Empire. Yadeth provided a way.
Yadeth always provides a way, Arteth. Be more specific.
I met a Dorethi Arteth in Duladel 12 years ago. He preached to me, and I believed. He gave me copies of the Do Keseg and the Do Dereth, and I read them both in one night. The Holy Arteth sent me back to Aerilan to help convert those in my home country, and I set up in Rhaein. I taught there for 7 years, until the day I heard that a Dorethi chapel had been built in Kayi itself. I overcame my loathing for the Elantrians, knowing the Holy Yadeth had struck them down with an eternal punishment, and came to join with my Fjordel brethren. I brought my converts with me. Fully half of the believers in Kayi came with me from Rhaein. Fionn was impressed with my diligence. He granted me the title of Arteth and allowed me to continue teaching.
You know what Arteth Fionn did was wrong.
Yes, my lord. And Arteth cannot appoint another to his own position. When I speak to the people, I never refer to myself as a priest of Dorethi, only a teacher.
What did you think of Arteth Fionn?
He was an undisciplined fool, my lord. His laxness kept Yadeth's kingdom from growing in Aerilan, and has made a mockery of our religion.
Hraethen smiled. Dilaf, though not of the chosen race, was obviously a man who understood the doctrine and culture of his religion. However, his ardor could be dangerous. The wild intensity in Dilaf's eyes was barely under control. Either he would have to be watched very closely, or he would have to be disposed of.
It appears that Arteth Fionn did one thing right, even if he didn't have the proper authority. I make you a full Arteth, Dilaf.
Hraethen congratulated himself on creating such a useful tool, completely satisfied until the moment Dilaf looked up from his bow. This passion was still there in Dilaf's eyes, but there was something else as well. Ambition. Hraethen frowned slightly, wondering whether or not he had just been manipulated. There was only one thing to do.
Arteth, are you sworn as any man's Odaif?
No, my lord.
Good. Then I will make you mine.
My lord, I am, of course, your humble servant.
You will be more than that, Arteth, if you would be my Odaif. I, your Hroden. You will be mine, heart and soul. If you follow Yadeth, you follow him through me. If you serve the Empire, you do it under me. Whatever you think, act, or say will be by my direction. Am I understood?
Fire burned in Dilaf's eyes.
Yes.
Good. Then your first order is to follow the priest Fionn. He should be getting on the ship to Fjordal right at this moment. I want you to make sure he does so. If Fionn gets off for any reason, kill him.
Yes, my Giorn.
Dilaf rushed from the room. Hraethen stood for a moment after the Aerilish man had gone, then shook his head and turned back to his desk. The scroll still lay where it had fallen from Fionn's unworthy fingers. Hraethen picked it up with a smile, his touch reverent. He was not a man who delighted in possessions. He set his sights on much grander accomplishments than the simple accumulation of useless baubles. However, occasionally an object came along that was so unique, Prathan reveled in simply knowing it belonged to him. One did not own such a thing for its usefulness or for its ability to impress others, but because it was a privilege to possess. The scroll was such an object. It had been scribed in front of Prathan by Wern's own hand. It was revelation directly from Yadeth. Scripture intended for only one man. Few people ever got to meet Yadeth's anointed, and even among the Gjorns, private audiences were rare. To receive orders directly from Wern's hand, such was the most exquisite of experiences. Prathan ran his eyes over the sacred words again, even though he had long since memorized their every detail.
Behold the words of Yadeth, through his servant Wern Wulfdin IV, Emperor and King, High Priest and Son, your request has been granted. Go to the heathen peoples of the West and declare to them my final warning. For while my empire is eternal, my patience will soon end. Not much longer will I slumber within a tomb of rock. The day of empire is at hand, and my glory will soon shine forth, a second sun blazing forth from Fjordin. The pagan nations of Eirelon and Teod have been blackened scars upon my land for long enough. 300 years have my priests served amongst those tainted by Elantris, and few have hearkened to their call. Know this, High Priest. My faithful warriors are prepared, and they await only the word of my word. You have 3 months to prophesy to the people of Eirelon. The holy soldiers of Fjordin will descend on the nation like hunting predators, rending and tearing the unworthy life from those who heed not my words. Only 3 months will pass before the destruction of all who oppose my empire. The time for my ascension nears, my son. Be stalwart and be diligent. Words of Yadeth, Lord of all creation, through his servant Wern Wulfdin IV, Emperor of Fjordin, Prophet of Shudereth, ruler of Yadeth's holy kingdom, and regent of all creation.
The time had finally come. Only 2 nations resisted. Fjordin had regained its former glory, glory lost hundreds of years ago when the First Empire collapsed. Once again, Eirelon and Teod were the only 2 kingdoms who resisted Fjordel rule. This time, with the might of Yadeth's holy calling behind it, Fjordin would prevail. Then, with all mankind united under Wern's rule, Yadeth could rise from his holy throne beneath the earth and reign in glorious majesty. And Raethan would be the one responsible for it. The conversion of Eirelon and Teod was his urgent duty. He had 3 months to change the religious temperament of an entire culture. It was a monumental task, but it was vital that he succeed. If he did not, Fjordin's armies would destroy every living being in Eirelon, and Teod would soon follow. The 2 nations, though separated by water, were the same in race, religion, and obstinance. The people might not yet know it, but Hraithen was the only thing standing between them and utter annihilation. They had resisted Yadeth and his people in arrogant defiance far too long. Hraithen was their last chance. Someday, they would call him their savior. The woman screamed until she grew too tired. She clawed at the broad gate, her fingernails leaving marks in the film of slime. Eventually, she slumped to the ground in a quiet heap, shaking from occasional sobs. Seeing her agony reminded Raoden of his own pain, the sharp twinge of his toe, the loss of his life outside.
They won't wait much longer.
Galadon rested his hand firmly on Raoden's arm, holding the prince back. The woman finally stumbled to her feet, looking dazed, as if she had forgotten where she was. She took a single, uncertain step to her left, her palm resting on the wall, as if it were a comfort, a connection to the outside world, rather than the barrier separating her from it.
It's done. She picked well, or as well as one could. Watch.
Shadows stirred in an alleyway directly across the courtyard. Raoden and Galadon watched from inside a ramshackle stone building, one of many that lined Elantris' entry courtyard. The shadows resolved into a group of men, and they approached the woman with determined, controlled steps, surrounding her. One reached out and took her basket of offerings. The woman didn't have the strength left to resist. She simply collapsed again. Raoden felt Galadon's fingers dig into his shoulder as he involuntarily pulled forward, wanting to dash out to confront the thieves.
Not a good idea, Kolo. Save your courage for yourself. If stubbing your toe nearly knocked you out, think how it would feel to have one of those cudgels cracking across your brave little head.
Raoden nodded, relaxing. The woman had been robbed, but it didn't look like she was in further danger.
I told you, she chose well. She might be a few pounds of food lighter, but she doesn't have any wounds. Now, if she had turned right, like you did, Sul, she would have been at the dubious mercy of Sheor's men. If she had gone forward, then Aeyndan would have had the right to her offerings. The left turn is definitely best. Karete's men take your food, but they rarely hurt you. Better to be hungry than spend the next few years with a broken arm.
Next few years?
Raoden turned away from the courtyard to regard his tall, dark-skinned companion.
I thought you said our wounds would last us an eternity.
We only assume they will soon. Show me an Elantrian who has managed to keep his wits until eternity ends, and maybe he'll be able to prove this theory.
How long do people usually last in here?
A year, maybe two.
What?
Thought we were immortal, did you? Just because we don't age, we'll last forever?
I don't know. I thought you said we couldn't die.
We can't. But the cuts, the bruises, the stubbed toes, they pile up. One can only take so much.
They kill themselves?
That's not an option. No, most of them lie around mumbling or screaming. Poor Ulos.
How long have you been here, then?
A few months.
The realization was another shock to pile on the already teetering stack. Raoden had assumed that Galadon had been an Elantrian for at least a few years. The doula spoke of life in Elantris as if it had been his home for decades, and he was impressively adept at navigating the enormous city. Raoden looked back at the courtyard, but the woman had already gone. She could have been a maid in his father's palace, a wealthy merchant's lady, or a simple housewife. The Sheod respected no classes. It took from all equally. She was gone now, having entered the gaping pit that was Elantris. He should have been able to help her.
All that for a single loaf of bread and a few flaccid vegetables.
It may not seem like much now, but just wait a few days. The only food that enters this place comes clutched in the arms of its new arrivals. You wait, Sul. You will feel the desire as well. It takes a strong man to resist when the hunger calls.
You do it.
Not very well. And I've only been here a few months. There's no telling what the hunger will drive me to do a year from now.
Just wait until my 30 days are done before you become a primordial beast, if you please. I'd hate to feel that I hadn't got my beef's worth out of you.
Does nothing frighten you, Sul?
Actually, pretty much everything here does. I'm just good at ignoring the fact that I'm terrified. If I ever realized how scared I am, you'll probably find me trying to hide under those cobblestones over there. Now, tell me more about these gangs.
There are three sections of Elantra, Sul, and three gangs. The market section is ruled by Sheor. You met a few members of his court yesterday, though they were too busy licking the slime off your offerings to introduce themselves. In the palace section, you'll find Karete. She's the one who so very politely relieved that woman of her food today. Last is Aeyndan. He spends most of his time in the university section.
A learned man?
No, an opportunist. He was the first one who realized that many of the library's older texts were written on vellum. Yesterday's classics have become tomorrow's lunch, Golo.
The old scrolls of Elantris are supposed to hold countless original works. They're priceless!
Sul, do I need to repeat my speech about hunger? What good is literature when your stomach hurts so much your eyes water?
That's a terrible argument. 2-century-old lambskin scrolls can't possibly taste very good.
Better than slime. Anyway, Eyendon supposedly ran out of scrolls a few months back. They tried boiling books, but that didn't work very well.
I'm surprised they haven't tried boiling one another.
Oh, it's been tried. Fortunately, something happens to us during the Sheod. Apparently, the flesh of a dead man doesn't taste so good, Golo. In fact, it's so violently bitter that no one can keep it down.
It's nice to see that cannibalism has been so logically ruled out as an option.
I told you, Sul. The hunger makes men do strange things.
And that makes it all right? You talk about hunger and pain as if they are forces which can't be resisted. Oh, anything is acceptable as long as the hunger made you do it. Remove our comforts and we become animals.
I'm sorry, Sul, but that's just the way things work.
It doesn't have to be.
Ten years wasn't long enough. Even in Aerilon's thick humidity, it should have taken longer for the city to deteriorate so much. Elantris looked as if it had been abandoned for centuries. Its wood was decaying, its plaster and bricks were disintegrating, even stone buildings were beginning to crumble, and coating everything was the omnipresent film of brown sludge. The two men walked slowly down a broad street. The thoroughfare was far larger than any of its kind back in Kaye. Elantris had been built on a massive scale, and while the size had seemed daunting from without, Raoden was only now beginning to grasp just how enormous the city was. He and Galadon had been walking for hours, and Galadon said they were still a moderate distance from their destination. The two did not rush, however. That was one of the first things Galadon had taught. In Elantris, one took one's time. Everything the doula did was performed with an air of utter precision, his movements relaxed and careful. The slightest scratch, no matter how negligible, added to an Elantrian's pain. The more careful one was, the longer one would stay sane. So Raoden followed, trying to mimic Galadon's attentive gait. Every time Raoden began to feel that the caution was excessive, all he had to do was look at one of the numerous forms that lay huddled in gutters and on street corners, and his determination would return. The Hoed, Galadon called them, those Elantrians who had succumbed to the pain. Their minds lost, their lives were filled with continual, unrelenting torture. They rarely moved, though some had enough feral instinct to remain crouched in the shadows. Raoden forced himself to close his ears to the words. His chest was beginning to constrict, as if he were suffering with the poor, faceless wretches. If he paid too much attention, he would go mad long before the pain took him. However, if he let his mind wander, it invariably turned to his outside life. But such thoughts were useless. He was an Elantrian now. Instead, he focused on the city itself. It was difficult to believe that Elantris had been the most beautiful city in Opalon, probably in the world. The slime was what he saw, the rot and the erosion. However, beneath the filth were the remnants of Elantris's former greatness, a spire, the remains of a delicately carved wall relief, grand chapels and vast mansions, pillars and arches. 10 years ago, this city had shone with its own mystical brightness, a city of pure white and gold. No one knew what had caused the Riode. There were those who theorized, most of them Durethi priests, that the fall of Elantris had been caused by God. The pre-Riode Elantrians had lived as gods, allowing other religions in Aerilon, but suffering them the same way a master lets his dog lick fallen food off the floor. The beauty of Elantris, the power its inhabitants wielded, had kept the general population from converting to Shu Keseg. Why seek an unseen deity when you had gods living before you? It had come with a tempest. That much even Raoden remembered. The earth itself had shattered. An enormous chasm appearing in the south, all of Aerilon quaking. With the destruction, Elantris had lost its glory. The Elantrians had changed from brilliant white-haired beings to creatures with splotchy skin and bald scalps, like sufferers of some horrible disease in the advanced stages of decay. Elantris had stopped glowing, instead growing dark. It had happened only 10 years ago. 10 years was not enough. Stone should not crumble after just a decade of neglect. The filth should not have piled up so quickly, not with so few inhabitants, most of whom were incapacitated. It was as if Elantris were intent on dying, a city committing suicide.
The market section of Elantris. This place used to be one of the most magnificent marketplaces in the world. Merchants came from across Opelon to sell their exotic goods to the Elantrians. A man could also come here to buy the more luxurious Elantrian magics. They didn't give everything away for free, Golo.
They stood atop a flat-roofed building. Apparently, some Elantrians had preferred flat roofs as opposed to peaks or domes, for the flat sections allowed for rooftop gardens. Before them lay a section of the city that looked pretty much the same as the rest of Elantris, dark and falling apart.
Can we get any closer?
You can if you want, Sewell, but I'm staying here. Sheor's men are fond of chasing people. It's probably one of the few pleasures they have left.
Tell me about Sheor, then.
In a place like this, many look for leaders. Someone to ward off a bit of the chaos. Like any society, those who are strongest often end up in command. Sheor is one who finds pleasure in controlling others. And for some reason, the most wild and morally corrupt Elantrians find their way to him.
And he gets to take the offerings of 1/3 of the newcomers.
Well, Sheor himself rarely bothers with such things. But yes, his followers get first call on 1/3 of the offerings.
Why the compromise? If Sheor's men are as uncontrollable as you imply, then what convinced them to hold to such an arbitrary agreement?
The other gangs are just as big as Sheor, Sewell. On the outside, people tend to be convinced of their own immortality. We are more realistic. One rarely wins a battle without at least a few wounds. And here, even a couple of slight cuts can be more devastating and more agonizing than a swift decapitation. Sheor's men are wild, but they are not complete idiots. They won't fight unless they have incredible odds or a promising reward. You think it was your physique that kept that man from attacking you yesterday?
I wasn't sure.
Even the slightest hint that you might fight back is enough to scare these men off, Sewell. The pleasure of torturing you just isn't worth the gamble that you might get in a lucky blow.
Show me where the other gangs live.
The university and the palace bordered one another. According to Galadon, Karate and Aeyndon had a very uneasy truce, and guards were usually posted on both sides to keep watch. Once again, Raoden's companion led him to a flat-roofed building, an untrustworthy set of stairs leading to the top. Raoden had to admit that the view was worth the effort. Elantris's palace was large enough to be magnificent despite the inevitable decay. 5 domes topped 5 wings, each with a majestic spire. Only one of the spires, the one in the middle, was still intact, but it rose high into the air, by far the tallest structure Raoden had ever seen.
That's said to be the exact center of Elantris.
Galadon nodded to the spire.
Once you could climb the steps winding around it and look out over the entire city. Nowadays, I wouldn't trust it, Golo.
The university was large, but less magnificent. It consisted of 5 or 6 long, flat buildings and a lot of open space, ground that had probably once held grass or gardens, both things that would have been eaten to their roots long ago by Elantris's starving inhabitants.
Karate is both the harshest and most lenient of the gang leaders.
Galadon gazed down on the university.
She doesn't often let new members into her gang, and she is extremely territorial. Sheol's men might chase you for a while if you wander onto his turf, but only if they feel like it. Karete suffers no intruders. However, if you leave Karete alone, she leaves you alone, and she rarely harms newcomers when she takes their food. You saw her earlier today. She always takes the food personally. Maybe she doesn't trust her underlings enough to handle it.
Perhaps. What else do you know about her?
Not much. Leaders of violent thieving gangs don't tend to be the type to spend their afternoons chatting.
Now who's taking things lightly?
You're a bad influence, Sewell. Dead people aren't supposed to be cheerful. Anyway, the only thing I can tell you about Karete is that she doesn't like being in Elantris very much.
Who does?
We all hate it, Sewell, but few of us have the courage to try and escape. Karete has been caught in KE 3 times now, always in the vicinity of the king's palace. One more time, and the priests will have her burned.
What does she want at the palace?
She hasn't been kind enough to explain it to me. Most people think she intends to assassinate King Iadon.
The king? What would that accomplish?
Revenge, discord, bloodlust. All very good reasons when you're already damned, Kolo.
What about the other gang leader?
Iadon? He claims he was some kind of noble before he was thrown in here. A baron, I think. He tried to establish himself as monarch of Elantris, and he is incredibly annoyed that Karete has control of the palace. He holds court, claims he will feed those who join him, though all they've gotten so far are a few boiled books, and makes plans for attacking K.E.
What? Attacking?
He isn't serious, but he is good at propaganda. He claims to have a plan to free Elantris, and it's gained him a large following. However, he's also brutal. Karete only harms people who try to sneak into the palace. Iadon is notorious for dispensing judgments at a whim. Personally, Sewell, I don't think he's completely sane.
Raoden studied the area in between the university and the palace. A certain object had caught his attention. Something so mundane, he wouldn't have given it a second look, had it not been the first of its kind he had seen in all of Elantris.
Is that a well?
Yes, the only one in the city.
How is that possible?
Indoor plumbing, Sewell, courtesy of Aeon Dor magic. Wells weren't necessary.
Then why build that one?
I think it was used in religious ceremonies. Several Elantrian worship services required water that had been freshly gathered from a moving river.
Raoden narrowed his eyes thoughtfully, but he didn't volunteer any information. As he stood watching the city, he noticed a small ball of light floating through one of the streets below. The Saeon meandered with an aimless air, occasionally floating in circles. Galadon noticed Raoden's scrutiny.
A Saeon, not uncommon in the city.
It's true, then?
Yes. When a Saeon's master gets taken by the Sheod, the Saeon itself is driven mad. There's a number of them floating through the city. They don't talk, they just hover about, mindless.
Raoden glanced away. Since being thrown into Elantris, he'd avoided thinking about his own Saeon, Iadon. Raoden had heard what happened to Saeons when their masters became Elantrians. Galadon glanced up at the sky.
It will rain soon.
Raoden raised an eyebrow at the cloudless sky.
If you say so.
Trust me. We should get inside, unless you want to spend the next few days in damp clothing. Fires are hard to make in Elantris. The wood is all too wet or too rotten to burn.
Where should we go?
Galadon shrugged.
Pick a house, Sewell. Chances are it won't be inhabited.
They had spent the previous night sleeping in an abandoned house, but now something occurred to Raoden.
Where do you live, Galadon?
Duladel.
I mean, nowadays.
Galadon thought for a moment, eyeing Raoden uncertainly. Then, with a shrug, he waved Raoden to follow him down the unstable stairs.
Come.
Ah, books!
Should never have brought you here. Now I'll never get rid of you.
Galadon had led Raoden into what had seemed to be a deserted wine cellar, but it turned out to be something quite different indeed. The air was drier here, even though it was below ground, and much cooler as well. As if to revoke his earlier cautions about fire, Galadon had pulled a lantern from a hidden alcove and lit it with a bit of flint and steel. What the light had revealed was surprising indeed. It looked like a learned man's study. There were aeons, the mystical ancient characters behind the aeonic language, painted all over the walls, and there were several shelves of books.
How did you ever find this place?
I stumbled upon it.
All these books. Maybe these could teach us the secret behind the aeons, Galadon. Did you ever think of that?
The aeons?
The magic of Elantris. They say that before the Riod, Elantrians could create powerful magics just by drawing aeons.
Whoa, you mean like this?
The large, dark-skinned man raised his hand. He traced a symbol in the air, Aeon Dio, and his finger left a glowing, white line behind it. Raoden's eyes opened wide, and the book dropped from his stunned fingers. The aeons. Historically, only the Elantrians had been able to call upon the power locked within them. That power was supposed to be gone. It was said to have failed when Elantris fell. Galadon smiled at him through the glowing symbol that hovered in the air between them.
Merciful Domai, where did he come from?
The Gjorn strode into the king's throne room with the arrogance characteristic of his kind. He wore the shining blood-red armor of a Dorethi high priest, an extravagant crimson cloak billowing out behind him, though he bore no weapon. It was a costume meant to impress, and despite what Serini thought of the Gjorns themselves, she had to admit that their clothing was effective. The Gjorn marched past her without a second glance, his eyes focused directly on the king. He was young for a Gjorn, probably in his 40s, and his short, well-styled black hair had only a trace of gray in it.
King Iodum!
The man gave only the slightest nod of his head in place of a bow.
I, Gjorn Hraethen, bring you a message from Wyrn Wulfdin the IV. He thinks that it is time our two nations shared more than a common border.
What more does Wyrn want? We already have a trade treaty with Fjordan.
His Holiness fears for the souls of your people, Your Majesty.
Well then, let him convert them. I have always allowed your priests complete freedom to preach in Eirilon.
The people respond too slowly, Your Majesty. They require a push, a sign, if you will. Wyrn thinks it is time you yourself converted to Shu Dareth.
I already believe in Shu Karath, priest. We serve the same god.
Dareth is the only true form of Shu Kessek.
I care nothing for the squabbles between the two sects, priest. Go convert someone who doesn't believe. There are still plenty of Aerilines who hold to the old religion.
You should not dismiss the offering of Wyrn so casually.
Honestly, priest, do we need to go through this? Your threats hold no weight. Fjordan hasn't held any real influence for 2 centuries. Do you seriously think to intimidate me with how powerful you used to be?
Fjordan is more powerful now than it ever was before.
Really? Where is your vast empire? Where are your armies? How many countries have you conquered in the last century? Maybe someday you people will realize that your empire collapsed 300 years ago.
Hraethen paused for a moment. Then he repeated his introductory nod and spun around, his cloak billowing dramatically as he stalked toward the door. Just before Hraethen left, he turned to shoot one final disappointed look at the throne room. His gaze, however, found Serini instead of the king. Their eyes locked for a moment, and she could see a slight hint of confusion as he studied her unusual height and blonde Teoish hair. Then he was gone. King Aedon turned back to his ledgers.
He doesn't see. He doesn't understand.
Understand what, my lady?
How dangerous that Gjorn is.
His Majesty is a merchant, my lady, not a true politician. He doesn't see things the same way you do.
Even so, King Aedon should be experienced enough to recognize that what Hraethen said, at least about Fjordan, was completely true. The Wyrns are more powerful now than they were centuries ago, even at the height of the old empire's power.
It is hard to look past military might, especially when one is a relatively new monarch.
King Iadon cannot fathom how Fjordan's army of priests could be more influential than its warriors ever were. Well, Eshi, at least now you don't have to worry about my causing too much unrest amongst Kei's nobility.
I seriously doubt that, my lady. How else would you spend your time?
Oh, Eshi, why would I bother with a bunch of incompetent would-be nobles when I can match wits with a full Gion? Warren picks his high priests well. If Iadon doesn't watch that man, and it doesn't seem like he will, then Hraethen will convert this city out from under him. What good will my sacrificial marriage do for Teod if Eirilon gives itself to our enemies?
You may be overreacting, my lady.
Not this time. Today was a test, Eshi. Now Hraethen will feel justified in taking action against the king. He's convinced himself that Eirilon is indeed ruled by a blasphemer. He'll try to find a way to overthrow Iadon's throne, and Eirilon's government will collapse for the second time in 10 years. This time it won't be the merchant class that fills the void of leadership. It will be the Dorethi priesthood.
So you are going to help Iadon?
He is my sovereign king.
Despite your opinion that he is insufferable.
Anything is better than Fjordel rule. Besides, maybe I was wrong about Iadon.
Things hadn't gone too poorly between the two of them since that first embarrassing meeting. Iadon had practically ignored her at Rayodin's funeral, which had suited Serini just fine. She'd been too busy watching for discrepancies in the ceremony. Unfortunately, the event had occurred with a disappointing level of orthodoxy, and no predominant nobleman had given themselves away by failing to show up or by looking too guilty during the proceedings.
Yes, perhaps Iadon and I can get along just by ignoring each other.
What in the name of burning Domai are you doing back in my court, girl?
What?
You!
Iadon pointed at her. He was understandably in a bad mood. Of course, from what she had heard, Iadon was rarely in a good mood.
Don't you understand that women aren't to come to my court unless they're invited?
No one told me that, Your Majesty.
Foolish women. Domai help their stupidity. It's amazing they are even smart enough to breathe.
I just wanted to see the paintings.
Iadon held his hand palm forward in the air to forestall any more of her drivel, turning back to his ledgers. Serini barely kept herself from smiling as she wiped her eyes and pretended to study the painting behind her.
That was unexpected.
I'll deal with Iadon later. I have someone more important to worry about now.
I just never thought I'd see the day when you, of all women, gave in to the feminine stereotype, even if it was just an act.
What? Me? Act? You know, I've never been able to figure out how you seons manage sounds like that. You don't have noses. How can you snort?
Years of practice, my lady. Am I truly going to have to suffer your whimpering every time you speak with the king?
He expects women to be foolish, so I'll be foolish. It's much easier to manipulate people when they assume you can't gather enough wits to remember your own name.
Eni, is that you?
The deep, scratchy voice was oddly familiar. It was as if the speaker had a sore throat, though she had never heard someone with a sore throat yell so loudly. Serini turned hesitantly. An enormous man, taller, broader, pudgier, and more muscled than seemed possible, shoved his way through the crowd in her direction.
It is you! We thought you weren't coming for another week!
Eshi, who is this lunatic and what does he want with me?
He looks familiar, my lady. I'm sorry, my memory isn't what it used to be.
The enormous man scooped Serini up into a bear hug. It was an odd feeling, her bottom half squished into his oversized gut, while her face was crushed by his hard, well-muscled chest.
You've changed. When I last saw you, you were only knee-high. Well, I doubt you were ever knee-high, but you were certainly no taller than a waist. Your mother always said you'd be a lanky one.
Serini shook her head. The voice was slightly familiar, but she couldn't place his features. She usually had such a good memory for faces. Unless...
Hunky Kay? Gracious Domai! What happened to your beard?
Aerilish nobles don't wear beards, little one. I haven't had one in years.
It was him. The voice was different, the beardless face unfamiliar, but the eyes were the same. She remembered looking up at those wide brown eyes, always full of laughter.
Hunky Kay, where's my present?
Those had always been the first words out of her mouth when he came to visit. Her uncle brought the most exotic of gifts. Delights that were extravagant enough to be unique, even to the daughter of a king.
Oh, I'm afraid I forgot the present this time, little one.
Serini blushed. However, before she could squeak out an apology, Hunky Kay wrapped a large arm around her shoulder and began showing her out of the throne room.
Come, you have to meet my wife.
Wife?
It had been over a decade since she had seen Kaiyan, but she remembered one fact quite clearly. Her uncle had been a sworn bachelor and a confirmed rascal.
Hunky Kay is married?
You aren't the only one who's grown over the last 10 years. Oh, and as cute as it is to hear you call me Hunky Kay, you'll probably want to call me Uncle Kaiyan now.
Serini blushed again. Hunky Kay had been the creation of a child unable to pronounce her uncle's name.
So, how's your father doing? Acting properly regal, I assume?
He's doing fine, Uncle. Though I'm sure he'd be surprised to find you living in the court of Aerilan.
He knows.
No, he thinks you left on one of your voyages and settled on one of the Far Islands.
Serini, if you're as quick-witted a woman as you were a girl, then you should have learned by now to separate the truth from the stories.
But why? All this time you were living just a few days' trip from home, and you never came to visit.
Stories for another day, little one. Right now, you need to meet the monster of a woman who finally managed to capture your uncle.
Kaiyan's wife was hardly a monster. In fact, she was one of the most beautiful, mature women Serini had ever seen. Deora had a strong face with sharp, statuesque features and a well-styled head of auburn hair. She was not what Serini would ever have placed her uncle with. Of course, her most recent memories of Kaiyan were over a decade old. Kaiyan's large, castle-like mansion was not a surprise. She remembered that her uncle had been a merchant of some sort, and her memories were highlighted by expensive gifts and Kaiyan's exotic clothing. He had not only been the younger son of a king, but he had also been an extremely successful businessman. Something he still was, apparently. He'd been out of the city on business until that morning, which was why she hadn't seen him at the funeral. The greatest shock was the children. Despite the fact that Serini knew he was married, she just couldn't reconcile her recollections of the unruly Hunky Kay with the concept of fatherhood. Her preconceptions were neatly shattered the moment Kaiyan and Deora opened the door to the mansion's dining hall.
Father's home!
Yes, Father's home. And no, I didn't bring you anything. I've only been gone a few minutes.
I don't care what you did or didn't bring me. I just want to eat.
The speaker, a young girl about 10 years old, wore a pink dress tied with white ribbon and had a bob of stark blonde hair on her head.
When do you not want to eat, Kay-Ice?
The little boy looked almost identical to the girl.
Children, don't squabble. We have a guest.
Deora indicated Serini with a polite nod.
Serini, meet your cousins, Kay-Ice and Deorn, the two biggest headaches in your poor uncle's life.
Now, Father, you know you would have gone mad from boredom long ago without them.
A man stood in the far doorway. The newcomer was of average Aerilish height, which meant he was an inch or two shorter than Serini, with a lean build and a strikingly handsome, hawkish face. His hair had been parted down the center and flopped down on either side of his face. A woman with black hair stood at his side, her lips slightly pursed as she studied Serini. The man bowed slightly to Serini.
Your Highness.
My son, Lukel.
Your son?
No, Lukel is from Deora's previous marriage.
Not that that makes me any less his son. You can't escape responsibility for me that easily.
Domai himself wouldn't dare take responsibility for you. Anyway, that's Yala next to him.
Your daughter.
Daughter-in-law.
Your Fjordel.
The hair had been a clue, but the name and accent were giveaways.
Svordish.
Not that it was much different. The small kingdom of Svordin was all but a Fjordel province.
Yala and I studied together at the Svordish University. We were married last month.
Congratulations. It's nice to know I'm not the only newlywed in the room.
I'm sorry, Eni. I wasn't going to bring it up, but you deserved better than this. You were always such a happy child.
No loss to me. It isn't like I knew him, Uncle.
Even still, it must have been a shock.
You could say that.
If it helps, Prince Raoden was a good man. One of the best I have ever known. If you knew a little more about Aerilish politics, then you would understand that I don't use those words lightly when referring to a member of Iodon's court.
Serene nodded slightly. Part of her was happy to hear she hadn't misjudged Raoden by his letters. The other half thought it would have been easier to continue thinking that he was like his father.
Enough talk about dead princes! If we don't eat soon, Father will have to stop complaining about me because I'll be dead.
Yes, Kaiyan. You should probably go to the kitchen and make sure your feast isn't burning.
Oh, I have each dish cooking on a precise schedule. It would be impossible for one to... Merciful Domai!
The large man barreled out of the room.
Uncle Kaiyan is cooking dinner?
Your uncle is one of the best chefs in this town, dear.
Uncle Kaiyan? Cook?
Deora nodded, as if it were an everyday occurrence.
Kaiyan has traveled more places in this world than anyone in Aerilon, and he brought back recipes from each one. I believe tonight he's fixing something he learned in Jindo.
Does this mean we're going to eat? I hate Jindoese food. It's too spicy.
You don't like anything unless it has a handful of sugar mixed in.
Lukel mussed his half-brother's hair.
Deorn, go, run and get Edayan.
Another one?
Yes, the last. Lukel's full brother.
He's probably sleeping. Edayan's always sleeping. I think it's because his mind is only half awake.
Kaice, little girls who say such things about their brothers often end up in bed without supper. Deorn, get moving.
You don't look like a princess.
Kai sat primly on her chair beside Serene. The dining room had a homey, study-like feel, and relics from Kaiyan's traveling days.
What do you mean?
Serene was slightly distracted, trying to figure out how to use the odd Jindoese dining utensils. There were two of them, one with a sharp pointed end and the other with a flat shoveled end.
Well, for one thing, you're way too tall.
Kaice.
Well, it's true. All the books say princesses are petite. I'm not exactly sure what petite means, but I don't think she's it.
I'm Teowish. We're all this tall.
Father's Teowish too, Kaice, and you know how tall he is. But Father's fat. Why aren't you fat too, Serene?
Kaiyan, who had just appeared out of the kitchen doors, absently rapped his daughter on the head with the bottom of a serving tray as he passed.
Ow!
Kaiyan listened to the hollow ring of the pan.
Just as I thought, your head is completely hollow. I guess that explains a lot.
Kaiyan rubbed her head petulantly before turning back to her meal.
I still think princesses should be smaller. Besides, princesses are supposed to have good table manners. Cousin Serene's dropped about half of her meal on the floor. Who ever heard of a princess that didn't know how to use my pawn sticks?
Serene blushed, looking down at the foreign utensils.
Don't listen to her, Eni. This is Jindoese food. It's made with so much grease that if half of it doesn't end up on the floor, then something's wrong. You'll get the hang of those sticks eventually.
You can use a spoon if you want. Edayan always does.
Serene's eyes were immediately drawn to the fourth child. Edayan was a thin-faced boy in his late teens. He had a pale white complexion and a strange, discomforting cast to his face. He ate awkwardly, his motions stiff and uncontrolled. As he ate, he mumbled to himself, repeating numbers as far as Serene could tell. Serene had met people like him before, children whose minds weren't completely whole.
Father, the meal is delicious. I don't believe you've ever fixed this shrimp dish before.
It's called haiko. I learned it off a traveling merchant while you were studying in Svordan last year.
16,400,772. That's how many steps it is to Svordan.
Serene paused slightly at Adayan's addition, but the rest of the family paid him no heed.
It truly is wonderful, Uncle. I would never have figured you for a chef.
I've always enjoyed it.
You don't do all the cooking, do you?
Fortunately, no. Deora is quite the cook herself.
You mean you don't have a cook to fix your meals for you?
Kaiyan and Deora shook their heads in unison.
Father is our cook.
No servers or butlers either?
Serini had assumed the lack of servants was due to an odd desire on Kaiyan's part to keep this particular meal personal.
None at all.
But why?
Serini, do you know what happened here 10 years ago?
The Riod? The punishment?
Yes. But do you know what that means?
The end of the Elantrians.
You probably never met an Elantrian. It is hard to explain how much this country changed when the disaster struck. Elantris used to be the most beautiful city in the world. Trust me, I've been everywhere else. It was a monument of glowing stone and lustrous metal, and its inhabitants looked like they were chiseled from the same materials. Then they fell.
Yes, I've studied this before. Their skin turned dark with black spots, and their hair began to fall from their skulls.
You can say that with the knowledge of books, but you weren't here when it happened. You can't know the horror that comes from seeing gods turn wretched and foul. Their fall destroyed the Aerilish government, throwing the country into total chaos. It was the servants who started the revolution, Serini. The very day their masters fell, the servants turned on them. Some, mostly the country's current nobility, say it was because the lower class in Elantris was treated too well, that their pampered natures inspired them to cast down their former rulers at the first sign of weakness. I think it was simply fear. Ignorant fear that the Elantrians had a vile disease mixed with the terror that comes from seeing someone you had worshipped stricken down before you. Either way, the servants are the ones who did the most damage. First in small groups, then in an incredibly destructive riot, killing any Elantrian they could find. The most powerful Elantrians went first, but the killings spread to the weaker ones as well. It didn't stop with the Elantrians either. The people attacked families, friends, and even those who had been appointed to positions by the Elantrians. Deora and I watched it all, horrified and thankful that there were no Elantrians in the family. Because of that night, we haven't ever been able to convince ourselves to hire servants.
Not that we really need them. You'd be surprised at how much you can get done on your own.
Especially when you have a couple of children to do the dirty jobs.
Is that all we're good for, Father? Scrubbing floors?
It's the only reason I've ever found for having kids. Your mother and I only had Deorn because we decided we needed another couple of hands to wash chamber pots.
Father, please, I'm trying to eat.
Merciful Domai, help the man who interrupts Kaeis's supper.
Princess Kaeis.
Oh, so my little girl's a princess now.
If Serini can be one, then so can I. After all, you're her uncle, and that should make you a prince, right, Father?
Technically, yes. Though I don't think I officially have a title anymore.
They probably kicked you out because you spoke of chamber pots during supper. Princes can't do that sort of thing, you know. It's horrible table manners.
Of course. I wonder why I never realized that before.
So, if you are a prince, then your daughter is a princess.
I'm afraid it doesn't work that way, Kaeis. Father's not king, so his kids would be barons or counts, not princes.
Is that true?
I'm afraid so. However, trust me, anyone who claims you're not a princess, Kaeis, hasn't ever listened to you complain at bedtime.
The little girl thought for a moment, and apparently unsure how to take the comment, simply turned back to her dinner. Serini wasn't paying much attention. Her mind had frozen at the part where her uncle had said,
I don't think I officially have a title anymore.
It smelled of politics. Serini thought she knew every important event that had happened in Teod's court during the last 50 years, and she knew nothing of Kaiyan being officially stripped of his title. Before she could ponder any more at the incongruity, Aishi floated in through a window. In the excitement of the dinner, Serini had almost forgotten that she'd sent him to follow the Giorn Hraithen. The ball of light stopped hesitantly in the air near the window.
My lady, am I interrupting?
No, Aishi, come in and meet my family.
You have a say on.
This is Aishi. He's been serving my house for over 2 centuries, and he's the wisest Seon I've ever known.
Why, lady, you exaggerate.
Seon.
They've always been rare, now more than ever.
Where did you get him?
From my mother. She passed Eishi to me when I was born.
The passing of a Saiyan. It was one of the finest gifts a person could receive. Someday, Serini would have to pass Eishi, selecting a new ward for him to watch over and care for. She had planned it to be one of her children, or perhaps grandchildren. The possibility of either ever existing, however, was looking increasingly unlikely.
A Saiyan! Can I play with him after supper?
Play with me?
Can I please, Cousin Serini?
I don't know. I seem to recall a few comments about my height.
It was at that moment, among their laughter, that Serini began to feel her tension ease for the first time since leaving her homeland a week before.
There is no hope for the king, I'm afraid.
Raythan folded his arms across his breastplate thoughtfully as he looked back at the throne room.
Your Grace?
King Aedon, dear love. I had hoped to save him, though I never really expected the nobility to follow me without a fight. They're too entrenched in their ways. Perhaps if we had gotten to them right after the Riod. Of course, we weren't sure that whatever disease had taken the Elantrians wouldn't affect us as well.
Yadeth struck down the Elantrians.
Yes, but oftentimes Yadeth uses natural processes to bring about his will. The plague will kill Fjordal as well as Erelin.
Yadeth would protect his chosen.
Of course.
Raythan shot one more dissatisfied glance down the hallway toward the throne room. He had made the offer out of duty, knowing that the easiest way to save Aerelon would be to convert its ruler. But he hadn't expected Aedon to respond favorably. If only the king knew how much suffering he could forestall with a simple profession of faith. It was too late now. Aedon had formally rejected Yadeth. He would have to become an example. However, Raythan would have to be careful. Memories of the Duladan Revolution were still stark in Raythan's mind. The death, blood, and chaos. Such a cataclysm had to be avoided. Raythan was a stern man, and a determined one, but he was no lover of carnage. Of course, with only 3 months' time, he might not have a choice. If he was going to succeed, he might have to incite a revolt. More death and more chaos. Horrible things to throw upon a nation that still hadn't recovered from its last violent revolution. However, Yadeth's empire would not sit still and wait because a few ignorant nobles refused to accept the truth.
I suppose I expected too much of them. They are, after all, only Erelins.
Dilof made no response to the comment. The two men turned and walked out of the palace, passing both sculpture and servant without so much as a glance.
I noticed someone odd in the throne room, Ardeth. Perhaps you can help me identify her. She was Aeonic, but she was taller than most Erelins, and her hair was much lighter than the average Erelish brown. She looked out of place.
What was she wearing, Your Holiness?
Black. All black, with a yellow sash.
The new princess, Your Grace.
New princess?
She arrived yesterday, the same as yourself. She was to be married to Aedon's son, Raodin.
Raythan nodded. He hadn't attended the prince's funeral, but he had heard of the event. He hadn't known, however, of the impending marriage. The betrothal must have occurred recently.
She's still here, even though the prince died?
Yes. Unfortunately for her, the royal engagement contract made her his wife the moment he died.
Ah. Where is she from?
Tailed, Your Grace.
Raythan nodded, understanding the hatred in Dilof's voice. Aerelon, despite the blasphemous city of Elantris, at least showed some possibility for redemption. Teod, however, was the homeland of Shu Korath, a degenerate sect of Shu Keseg, the parent religion of Shu Dereth. The day Teod fell beneath Fjordan's glory would be a joyous day indeed.
A Teoish princess could be a problem.
Nothing can hinder Yadeth's empire.
If nothing could hinder it, Ardeth, then it would already encompass the entire planet. Yadeth takes pleasure in allowing his servants to serve him, and grants us glory in bending the foolish before our will. And of all the fools in the world, Teoish fools are the most dangerous.
How could one woman be a danger to you, Your Holiness?
Well, for one thing, her marriage means that Teod and Erelon have a formal blood bond. If we aren't careful, we'll have to fight them both at once. A man is more likely to think himself a hero when he has an ally to support him.
I understand, Your Grace.
Raven nodded, sweeping out into the sunlight.
Pay attention, Arteth, and I will teach you a very important lesson. One that few people know, and even fewer can properly use.
What lesson is that?
I will show you the way to destroy a nation. The means by which the man of Yatith can topple kingdoms and seize control of the people's souls.
I am eager to learn, Your Grace.
Good.
Raythan looked across Kaye at the enormous wall of Elantris. It rose above the city like a mountain.
Take me up there. I wish to view the fallen lords of Erelon.